If I walk out of this door and they're in a better place because of my visit for real estate, I've done my job. And the energy around that typically translates to people want to use your services anyway. So be kind to yourself and be kind to people, but be competitive and have a red hot go.
You're listening to Elevate, the official podcast of Elite Agent for Real Estate Industry Sales Professionals, Property Managers and Leaders. With thanks to our partner, Connect Now, Elevate brings you the best tools, thinking and strategies to elevate your results. To download your written action guide from this podcast containing extra tips, links and shortcuts, visit EliteAgentElevate.com. And for more information about how Connect Now can make moving easier on your clients, visit connectnow.com.au. Here is your host, Samantha McLean.
Welcome to another episode of the Elevate podcast, where we delve into some of the most interesting minds in business and in real estate for the very best tips and strategies for you to implement to elevate your business. I'm Samantha McLean, editor of Elite Agent and host of this week's show. Joining me today is one of the directors of one of Adelaide's largest independent residential agencies, Owens Casserly. Thanks for joining us again, Alex Owens.
Sam, thanks so much for having us. We just had a bit of a chat before we got on online just then about all the various different issues that are out there in the industry. And one thing we didn't mention is that we're all probably absolutely buggered because no one's had a winter break. And, you know, we're all sort of crawling to the finish line, which is actually spring, which is when we're going to get hopefully busier again. So go figure.
Yeah, I know. So how's things in Adelaide at the moment? Is it still pretty rad down there?
Yeah, typical Adelaide, Sam. We've managed to, touch wood, we've managed to escape the full brunt of COVID 2.0. We shut down really quickly on COVID 1.0 and we held it back. So we had a period of time for 6 weeks where volumes were down by about 50, 60% end of March into all of April. And then it kind of crept back into, you know, May 40% down, June 30% down, probably it was April, May, June, and we're back now to pre-COVID budget level. So we're passing our figures from last year, this time last year. But generally, the market is tight for listings. Realestate.com, Homely, Domain, they're all sort of saying 20, 25% down on the long-term averages of listings. So buyers are starved for stock, and in the more premium suburbs of Adelaide, prices are probably going up.
Well, interesting. So you're seeing a shortage of stock and a lot of buyers. That's the situation in a lot of areas around the place right now, is that vendors are just a bit nervous to come to market.
Actually, funny enough, not too much nerves. It's more around they don't want to be locked out of the market. So if they sell and then they can't find anything, you know, what are they going to do? And we were just talking about your situation with your commercial premises and exactly the same thing. And it's like, oh, no, like then got to go and rent. And actually, the rental market's really tight too, because tenants have said, oh, look, you know, stay put, I'm not going to move. You know, the CBD market's been hit pretty hard because international students and interstate travel and that sort of stuff. But it's almost like we're in this bit of a locked market at the moment. No one wants to make the first move. And then interest rates being so low, you know, bridging finance is easy to get as long as, you know, you have cheap rates and you can get it if you've got the runs on the board, if you like, financially. So people are like, you know, just staying put and really becoming now a good old-fashioned market where you have to find a buyer and a seller and match them together, rather than the market that we got used to for many years where it was signboard goes up, put it online, a lineup of buyers, you sell it, and then you do the same thing again. It's like you actually really need to be a deal maker in the current market. And the term off-market's being used a lot and people hate it, some people love it. But whatever term we use for it, it's matching a buyer to a seller in an environment where it hasn't been put onto the major internet portals yet. And I was listening to Joel Davron, who's a good mate of mine from Remax, and he said it really well, that there's actually a demand for it in the market. And I think Joel said, resonated with me, that we were taught you've got to have competition, you've got to have premium marketing. And maybe it still does get the highest price, but you know, we can present that to our clients. But if they're happy with a easy transaction and not a whole bunch of people walking through their house, COVID perhaps, that might be like, you know, all these sick people walking through my house, neighbours. Nah, if you can get me the price I'm happy with, they're all desktop valuers now anyway, so they know what their house is worth. They're all looking at the sold section of the various portals. So they're saying, look, I'm happy with this price, get me that price and I'll sell. So yeah, it's certainly become that marketplace of the agents who are thinking outside the square and really working out what the dissatisfaction is for those people that want to make a move, winding up that dissatisfaction, but then finding the solution for them they're the agents that seem to be doing really well at the moment.
It's like back to basics, isn't it? I'm not going to say the old days because I might date myself yet again on this show, but it's going back to when it was private appointments and personal relationships and lots of phone calls and things like that. So what are you coaching your agents for right now?
Well, it's really about the consumer, Sam. You know, what are they looking to achieve out of their move and how do we best facilitate that? So if it's in their best interest in their situation to go full bore, the big campaign, you know, they're ready, they're committed, they're happy to go. Well, that's what we'll tailor up for them. And we just work out what their situation is and then tailor the best solution that suits them. So it's really now having a variety of options for them and providing those options to them. And you comment before around the good old-fashioned matching the buyer to the seller. That's certainly there. But the beauty of tech now is that we can have visibility over what people are thinking and doing. So, I mean, we use tech at OC where we can have visibility over all of our buyer database. And we've got 120,000 people on the database across our 5 offices. It's an open database. And the power in that is that using systems like Rita or Propic or HubSpot or Salesforce or, you know, whichever one you use, it's got the AI capacity. You can log into your dashboard in the morning and one of your vendors from 7 years ago has made an inquiry on a rental property in our rental division. It's like, I wonder if what's happening at home there. Maybe John and Jan aren't getting along too well. You know, John's out there looking for rental properties and you're creating the ability to ring the people at the right time with the right reasons, with the right information. And, you know, Sarah Bell's doing an awesome job at Rita and I've seen the latest Rita 4.0 where it actually gives things to talk about. So on the side of the screen, it'll say, look, talk about these 2 or 3 sales. And so if you're using that in conjunction with some visibility software, then you're not kind of just ringing people randomly and wanting to try to, you know, get a listing like Tom Panos would say, like commission breath. It's like ringing the people that we can see visibly are in the market and they're saying, hey, I'm in buying and selling mode. So how can we help you? How can we find you the property? You know, Mr. and Mrs. Buyer, are you finding it hard to find something out there at the moment? Yeah, we are. Well, you know, a lot of agencies are selling properties pre-market. So what about if I go register on your behalf for, you know, with all those agents and then I can help you to find something? So the agents that aren't in momentum mode, that haven't been in the game for 20 years and are kind of chapter 20 in their real estate novel, and the ones that are in chapter 2 or 3 or, you know, needing to regain momentum, are the ones who are really using these tools to be able to have a volume of contact points to people, adding value at the right time in that real estate selling cycle that those people have. So our top guys are sending out like little CMAs on properties that they're interested in. You know, they're helping them to find properties. They're really adding value rather than, hey, I'm touching base, are you ready to sell yet?
I mean, there's lots of indicators these days that, I mean, we were talking to Google the other day and apparently it takes something 19 months is the journey these days, which is incredible, like from when someone starts thinking about selling a property. So you've really got to have a good nurture campaign planned over that.
Nurture is the word. And we've got a projects business, development business, and full credit to my business partner there, Rob Mitchell. He's worked hard for 3 or 4 years to build the software and create the nurture campaign. So we might be selling 40 apartments and in those 40 apartments, there's probably 4 different buyer types because of the different types of apartments. So then we create a different marketing, 4 different looking and feeling marketing campaigns and then targeting the personas. And then on that website for that particular development, they self-select and they self-profile themselves. We provide them with 30, 50, sometimes 200 pages of content. And then the website will give us visibility over what they're looking at, how long they're looking at it for. It'll turn up and down the dial on social media marketing and EDM marketing with the workflows. Like, I mean, it's really become a sophisticated industry now, whereas it used to really be, frankly, a cottage industry in real estate and also project sales. And that's now the new normal quote that's getting around. People are comparing their experience in real estate to their best experience in any industry. So it's no longer like if one of our landlords walks through an open inspection and they've got 7 properties on our books and they've sold 15 properties through us before, I think it's pretty nice to be able to say, hi, Mr. Smith, welcome to the open inspection. It's great to see you. And then a little ping goes out to our new business executive to say, hey, Mr. Smith's back looking again in the market. Might want to give him a call. You know, the dominoes can do it. So, and that's a, you know, $15 pizza time that we lift our game in real estate to the same level.
Yeah, that's really, really innovative, actually. So, but I mean, you guys have always been ahead of the curve in terms of innovation, but what you're talking about there is super sophisticated. Do you have some specialists internally now that just look after like the technology side of the business?
We do. So both internally and externally. So we have a team in the Philippines as well that helps us to do that, specialists in that software that we couldn't find locally. And then we've got a local kind of mentor and then a team in our office as well. So probably half a dozen people that are involved in that side of the tech. But, you know, it's very easy to get too caught up as well in like being too tech focused. So it's really important to have the consumer focus first. Like, what's the reason for the tech? You know, firstly, does it help the consumer? And then internally, Nathan and I see our agents as our consumers. You know, Richard Branson would say, keep your staff happy, then they'll keep the clients happy. So we need to provide that service to our agents so then they can provide it to clients as well. And in the current environment, I think we were chatting before, Sam, around, you know, tight listings for sales. It's in Adelaide, we're 20-25% down on listings and the long-term average. I think that's probably pretty consistent around the place. A lot of agents are leaving the industry. I saw the latest CoreLogic report, market share report figures, and in Adelaide in the last year, 20% of the small independent agencies have either gone or been absorbed, and all the major franchise groups have lost, you know, 10% of their offices and a lot of agents. So it's like, well, how do we retain our agents and how do we also provide a service to the consumers that is above the rest of the market? So Nathan and I made a decision, and in fact, just yesterday we employed a COO to our first person to sort of come in and actually run the whole of Owens Casserly. Absolute gun, John Thompson, he ran Hudson's recruitment, $30 million recruitment business. So he's coming on board to help us to run the management team, the inner workings of the business, so that Nathan and I can get back out there in the field to drive innovation and also drive, you know, business development, grow our agents, help convert. I think in real estate, a lot of the times I see this, and we're guilty of it as well, where you spend all this time, Sam, on trying to find leads. And then when you find the leads, are you actually going out there and, like, are you sending out a lone soldier with a little BB gun to, like, bring back the prisoner of war? Or are you sending out the Navy SEALs that have done, like, a, you know, 8 weeks of training and preparation at camp to go out there and bring the listing back and spend money and time on prospecting? But then, like, you just go, good luck, buddy. And then he goes out to the lounge room and then, like, did you win it? You know, it's kind of like, yes or no? And, you know, we do our best to, like, create the John McGrath 30-40-30, a world-class 30% before you list it, 40% of listing it's on the spot, 30% is the follow-up. And we try to make sure that's all world-class. But it's like, well, how do we look at this a bit differently? How do we actually deploy the Navy SEALs in there? And, you know, I was speaking with Kate Strickland from Marshall White, and they're doing a very similar thing in the current climate. It's like, send out two agents that have won, follow-up call from the CEO, you know, a visit from the CEO the next day to just show how keen we are to represent them in the marketplace, you know, take a couple of hot buyers through, like real buyers, hot buyers. Alex Minton from McGrath does that beautifully well, has his, like, printout from the database, but also has the coffee-stained, handwritten 15 buyers that he's been working with. And how do we look different in the market, whether it's do a two-stage appraisal, you go out and you view it, and then you bring them into the office. You know, if you've got a really beautiful office, well, that'll be a different experience than perhaps the other agents. So it's really looking at how do we do things differently in a low volume environment to improve our appraisal to listing ratio and increase the experience for the consumer and make them think, well, just got to go with these guys because they're just so professional. And then it's, you know, okay, and I connected with the agent, tick, tick. Where do I sign, sort of thing. So I've forgotten how I got onto that topic. But,
yeah, no, it's just letting you talk then, because it's really interesting. That's how we used to approach corporate sales back in my old days at, you know, at Optus and BT and Telstra. You wouldn't have a one-on-one relationship. You would have, you know, like a one-to-many where you would sort of look at who the decision makers were on the corporate side of the business, and then you'd also look at who you had in the team and who would connect with who the best. That's really an evolution for real estate, is to sort of be thinking about, all right, well, I'll get the CEO to give Mrs. Vendor a call, and I'll get someone else who's maybe a bit younger to have a talk to the kids, or some investment advice from someone else. Like, I think that's really clever.
Josh Fegan puts it, it's like having situational awareness. Okay, if this is a, you know, deceased estate, there's four beneficiaries and an executor, and then you're going out by yourself and you're trying to pitch the five people and they're all pinging questions at you. So much easier to be on your game when you've got a batting partner with you or you've got a buddy, and then reading who the vendors are, you know, what age are they, what's two men, two ladies, am I as an agent kind of in the twilight of my career, should I bring like a younger agent of the opposite sex in with me? Reading who you think would suit those people to maximise the chances of connection and having that presentation stand out to them. Whereas, you know, again, I think we get a bit caught up in like us, and it's a solo sport. I'm a tennis player. I'm not a basketball player. But it's like, oh, well, what about the Davis Cup? You know, we can all play independently, but let's play together as well. And yes, yeah, so that part of it, what we're seeing is a bit of a trend at the moment, is that the better agents and agencies are looking at different ways of being able to stand out. And I guess that's not nothing new, but in that really low listing environment, critical to just make it look like that you are certainly standing out from the rest of the crowd. And you know, again, tech helps. You know, we're using one of those proposal softwares at the moment where, you know, the pre-listing kit goes out and there's visibility over what they've looked at and what they've opened. And then that gives you the chance that if you can't list it on the spot, to update that proposal and then again see what they're looking at. And then the follow-up call the next day, potentially from the CEO, where it's like, well, were all the questions answered by our agent? I ring every appraiser. We really appreciate you ringing OC in, and we'd love to represent you in the market. Everything was answered. Oh, but can I just ask, what would be the two or three key things you're going to choose an agent on now? And then if they say, look, fee, marketing and rapport, well, I probably can't do much about the rapport on the phone. And so they either like the agent or they don't, really. I can give the agent. But then it's like, well, fee and marketing. And I might have a pre-chat with the agent to say, well, you went in at 2.5% and 10 grand of marketing. Would you be happy at 2.2% and 7 grand of marketing? Like, just give me my leeway that we're happy to go in at. And then if I can get agreement with the vendor that, you know, all things being equal, you know, I'm not going to negotiate against myself. If it's academic, if you don't want to go with our agent, but if you're thinking all things being equal, yeah, I'm leaning towards, you know, Damien Willis and Owens Cassidy. Well, look, you know, Damien sold 3 properties last week. He's got 4 coming on next month. He's got an opening in his portfolio. Really keen to represent you. What do we need to do to represent you in the market? That's just coming from a different angle, so that, you know, we're trying to uncover and peel the onion back on what their real issues are and what they're trying to choose an agent on. So, yeah, conversion is more important now than even prospecting, because there's just not many leads out there. It's like, when you get them, are you presenting like Steve Jobs is unveiling the iPhone 13, or are you kind of just doing a little, frankly, like a pretty ordinary presentation? Are you running late? Have you got, you know, comparable sales on a tacky piece of paper? Are you actually nailing it? You know, are you a 9 out of 10, 30, 40, 30 agents? We looked at the top agents across Australia and what they're doing. You don't have to be a 9 out of 10 presenter, but if you can be a 9 out of 10 in the lead up and then even a 7 out of 10 on the day, and then your follow up is a 9 out of 10, well, you're probably ahead of the rest. So working out on where your weaknesses are, getting them up above career limiting, but then really focusing on your strengths.
Yeah, I agree with that. You know, people ask me what the top performers look like, and I say it's like 1% better in everything across the board. Sales is a chain link system. There's no point putting that on Facebook if your conversion's terrible or your follow-up's terrible, like, you know, because you're only improving one part of the convoy, not all of it.
Well, exactly right, Sam. And, you know, I guess also the other thing that comes to mind is, what's your communication at the moment? What's your dialogue? I'm not talking about having something scripted, but what connects with people in the current market? A lot of people have reevaluated their lives through COVID. They've reevaluated their work environment. They've reevaluated their partners, maybe. They've reevaluated their friends, and they've maybe even reevaluated their homes. Spent a lot of time in our home. So how do we get that kind of understanding across, and those conversations with the vendors that connects? And, you know, Nathan and I have been building out our own learning management platform at OC for the last 6 months or so, and we're probably 25% through it. And effectively, it's like, imagine setting yourself up for success is one topic, prospecting, listing and selling. So 4 major headings. And then under that, there's a variety of lessons, and they're all top agents or guests from around Australia, from other agencies, that are really awesome at that one element of whether it's the conversation around price in the lounge room, or whether it's phone call dialogue at the moment around, like, what's some good things to talk about when you're ringing people? And having that ability to be able to plug and play and training on demand, where our agents can listen to this Q&A series or plug and play and go, all right, well, that works 2 or 3 months ago, but landscape's bloody different than it was 2 or 3 months ago. And, you know, it changes kind of every week at the moment. So not that we want to be chopping and changing and confusing people. So you have to find that right balance of being consistent and disciplined and like a constant kind of message, but no point in saying things that aren't relevant anymore. So it's like, how do we evolve our learning, our LMS, as we call it, learning management system, so that any of our agents that we notice in the catch-ups, like they've just got a little weakness in this area, they're really good at these things. Well, look at lesson 10, chapter 3, and also lesson 15, chapter 2, and that'll probably get you going. So it's about, you know, what we're seeing, you know, from a leadership perspective is when a lot of agencies seem to be pulling back on training, they seem to be pulling back on investment. And, you know, obviously in Melbourne, it's really tough because the cash isn't flowing in. So we totally get that. But for the agencies that had a little bit of money in the till and can go, well, counter market, let's invest in our people, let's invest in our systems, let's invest in our training. And what's our point of difference as an agency? Look, if I'm a little small corner shop agency, well, you need to be nimble, you need to work on the family aspect, you need to let people in the community feel like, yeah, I want to support the local business. If you're a big franchise group, well, they've got their benefits saying, well, you know, brand strength. If you're a large independent agency, well, our strengths are we've got an open database, 120,000 people on our database. We meet 1,000 buyers every weekend. They all go in. Do you want to have first access to the qualified buyers? From an agent's perspective, if you've got 2,000 buyers in your database and we've got 50 agents in the group and some of those buyers or clients of that agent goes through different opens or email inquiries and our tech shows them, oh, yep, look, you know, John Smith's back in the market again, you should give him a call. Well, they're the things that we're kind of looking at to say as leaders, how do we make the most of our situation as a business? You know, we can't ever be the smaller family business anymore unless we made that decision to go. And we're not a franchise group. We're a corporate shared services model. We have partners in the business and we enable people to grow through the business and be shareholders in it. So it's just as a leader, it's like being really clear on what your model is and then making sure you play to those strengths and having some answers for the competitors as to what they'd be saying with their strengths.
Yeah, interesting. I mean, look, I think, you know, actually having a unique selling proposition right now is probably the most important thing you can have, for sure. And I'm glad you mentioned what you're doing there as a leader at the moment, or yourself and Nathan, because we're here for the Leadership Diaries today, which we haven't done with you before. So I'm very excited to get cracking on these questions with you. So are you ready?
Well, I haven't seen the questions, so let's see how we go.
All right. So first of all, what was your first job and what did it teach you?
My first ever job was stacking shelves at a supermarket when I was 14 years of age. And I was probably the same height. I'm 6'6", but I weighed about 58 kilos. So I was like this kind of beanstalk stacking the shelves. And what I learned was pretty quickly that you need to do the hard yards to save money. But I also learned pretty quickly that I didn't want to remain stacking shelves. So that was probably my first real kind of job. But I always, very early on, I saw my dad would have a gardener in or whatnot. So I was like, how can I earn money by doing little, you know, mini entrepreneurial things around the place? Yeah, certainly supermarkets were not my passion.
Interesting, but you might not have needed a ladder.
Another job I had some years ago when I travelled around Australia with three mates was fruit and vegetable picking to, you know, pay for our surfing trip around Australia. We were picking capsicums, and for those of you that don't know, capsicums grow in the ground. And so for a 6'6" guy, I remember at one point I was had my left hand on my knee and my right hand picking the capsicums, and the bless him, the little Italian farmer came up to me and said, "God gave thee two hands. Use the two hands." I also decided fruit picking wasn't best
for you. Fair enough. What is the most important thing you're working on right now and how are you making it happen?
Well, interesting to say making it happen. We trademarked the words "make it happen" as our logo in the business. I don't know whether that was intentional, but yeah, we have a pretty structured strategic plan in place at the moment, Sam, and there's four key pillars in the strategic plan. One is the business performance. The next one is data-driven insights to assist the customer. And then thirdly, around people and culture. And then the last one is community. So we have several major projects that we're working on in each one at the moment. But I'd say that what I mentioned earlier was to bring the COO in order to take over the effective running of the management team and the business, and to help see through some of these big projects that we're working on in order to release Nathan and myself back into the market to help grow our agents. And John Thompson, as I mentioned, is from Hudson Recruitment, very good recruiter. So I think read between the lines that building our learning management system, we're also keen to look for some more talent.
Amazing. What's the first hour of your day look like? Are you a 5 a.m. clubber?
2.5-year-old, 3.5-year-old and 7-year-old kids, Sam. Yeah. So I'm kind of just at whatever time they wake up at. I'm a big believer in requiring discipline in certain stages of your life and high impact moments through your career that you need to nail. And I'm having those work sprints where, you know, I'll reset and then just say, look, for these 8 weeks, I'm going to get up at 5 o'clock and I'm going to, you know, smash it out the park and I'm going to have a break. So I'm not one that says 5 a.m. for the rest of my life. I'm probably 6 o'clock on average at the moment. But, you know, for me, it's around being super productive with the time that I've got. So, and when I'm with my kids, you know, I really do my best to switch it onto flight mode and be present. Don't always work, but I do my best to do that. And then just during the day, just make sure that, you know, your appointments are stacked properly, each meeting, that the agenda's in my OneNote, that you're getting really, really good productivity. And you learn that over 15 years in real estate. And, you know, I think that also, frankly, the mental well-being of people in real estate industry, they burn out, and this kind of, I've got to be up at 5 a.m. and I need to make a million calls and you've got to work 7 days a week, super tough on people. There's only 2-3% of the industry that are built like that, but I've seen so many still successful real estate agents that aren't built like that. They can just be a little bit more, just tone down that energy, but just be a lot smarter about it. One of our top young guys, he's in our top 2 or 3 agents now. He's been in real estate only 3 or 4 years, 5 years max. Ollie Bowler, he's a great example. You know, he works sort of 5.5-6 days a week, but, you know, not the massive long days. He's just, when he's in the office, he's in the office, and he's just, you know, prospecting is an appointment. So he just does the appointment. He doesn't get distracted. So it's just about like getting in the right environment with the right people and getting the right plan in place in order to make sure that you've got the right energy when you need the energy.
Can you name someone that has had a tremendous impact on you as a leader?
First person that pops in my head is my dad. Yeah, I'm very lucky that I've got a very close relationship with my father. Nathan and I put an advisory board together in our first year when we started our business, because we fast realised we didn't know what we were doing and we'd better get some really smart business people around us, and the old adage of just getting people that are smarter than you around you. So my dad's been on the advisory board. He's a solicitor by profession, but sort of specialising commercial property matters, and just a very balanced guy. He came to Australia as a migrant from Holland and off of a boat in a little town called Waiala. His dad was a shipbuilder, my opa, and my opa was a prisoner of war, so they had it pretty tough. And then they came to Australia as 5 kids, and my dad drove taxis to pay for his law degree, and by the time he was 24 or 25, became the Dutch consul representing the Netherlands in Adelaide. It was good timing for him. And then he built a big legal business, him and a German mate from uni, which also to me showed the balanced nature of my dad. He could have probably had some ill feeling towards the Germans because my grandfather was a prisoner of war, but he's like, I can't judge people on the guy I'm going to business with, it's not him. So I also learned that kind of balance of judging each person on their own character and trying to not have those blueprints that we all carry. But no, very big influence, very balanced. And the other thing is just, a really good leader makes you feel like they've always got time for you. And that's something that I'm continuing to try to improve on and I haven't nailed yet. But, yeah, that's something I've observed from good leaders. They feel like that they're calm, they're under control, and they've got time.
Yeah, it's something so important in real estate too, is that you don't prejudge people that you meet based on somebody else that you might have met before. Because I think often, you know, like we do that as humans, and it can be quite detrimental when that person isn't anything like what you thought they would be.
I mean, we all have prejudgments based around all of our experiences through our whole life. We recently did the old DISC profiling internally to give some awareness around the people we're working with, what type of personality types they are. But when you read the summary, it's like, does that look like me or does that not look like me? And maybe 10 years ago, I would have gone, this report's stupid, doesn't know what it's talking about. But as hopefully your self-awareness improves and you get a little bit older, it's like, yeah, I can improve in those areas. They probably are my strength. So, you know, good leaders are always on a journey of self-development and building their EQ and trying to find ways to still be true to themselves authentically, but growing themselves. So it's like, don't get lost your own personality in trying to be like others, but grab the good bits that you see from others. And if that can add to your strengths of your personality traits, great. And that's always the challenge, isn't it? It's like, how do I remain authentic but continue to grow? Leadership isn't a linear equation. It's a more of a meandering creek where sometimes you're on the right track and then teaching kids when they grow up, like sometimes you need to give them a proverbial little bit of a whack and sometimes you need to give them a cuddle, and it's like, it's not always straight line.
I'd agree with that, definitely. Who are you learning from right now? Are there any sort of books or podcasts or anything like that that you'd recommend?
This wasn't planned, but a plug for you, Sam. I do like to listen to some of the other leaders on your podcast. I listened to Ben Collier the other day. I've never met Ben, but super balanced, nice guy, humble, selling $50 million homes through to, you know, the smaller ones. So from a pure real estate perspective, I always like to listen to other agents that are doing really well in their space, and you facilitate that very well. But then also sometimes you just need to like plug into other things. There's one with the guy from LinkedIn called like Scale Up or Scalability, Masters of Scale with Reid Hoffman, which is a ripper. You know, he interviews the owners of Airbnb and Uber and so on. And so that one's great. And every now and then when I'm going for my morning walk down to the Brown Hill Creek, which is nearby, and get some fresh air, and I'm just all kind of self-improvement out, I'll listen to Hamish and Andy and just piss myself.
Yeah, I know, you've got to have some fun. In fact, I think the most fun podcast I've listened to in the last 12 months was some girls were breaking down those old episodes of Beverly Hills 90210 and Melrose Place. And, you know, you can just get anything on a podcast at the moment. It's incredible.
Some of the listeners might not know what you're talking about there, Sam. But yeah, that was my era as well.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, long live the 90s. Anyway, moving along. Where do great ideas in your business come from?
Funny enough, I'm really good mates with Phil Harris, who's probably our biggest competitor, or one of them. But we're just really good mates, and we always see that there's room for two strong competitors in the market. I sent Phil an email a few weeks ago or a month or two ago because I saw one of his webinars, and he had this great document around some of his top agents' meeting rhythms. And it speaks to the character of the guy. I said, mate, tell me if it's not appropriate, but I'd love to get a copy of those meeting rhythms. And he said, yeah, mate, of course. And then within an hour, his EA has sent through all those meeting rhythms. And I think he made the comment at some point when I said, look, you know, your webinar series was outstanding. It's real credit to you, one of Australia's best trainers, and you should be really proud of what you've achieved. It's amazing. And he said, well, frankly, I've just taken it from everyone else. So I'm just the only one that's made the effort to just put it all together in a sequence. And I've just slowly improved it a little bit to suit my business. And, you know, he's very humble in what he said. But I guess in a similar nature, I mean, most of your ideas kind of, they form from others when you see something. And then you kind of go, all right, well, let me go and manifest on this. And Nathan always jokes because I think I'm one of the only blokes in his early 40s that still has baths. And it seems to be that my old man did the same thing, and all my good ideas seem to happen when I'm in the bathtub. So he sees sometimes these good ideas and these stupid ones, and he goes, oh, mate, are you in the bathtub again? Get out of that bloody tub.
You need a Google Home in the bathroom so you can say, hey, Google, write this down.
Yeah, that's right. But, like, no, seriously, there are environments that you can create where strategic thinking can be fostered, and then you can come up with these ideas. So we often do have strategic thinking days where we'll use either Edward de Bono's six thinking hats, where you have to put on, you know, like the positive hat, the negative hat, the opportunities hat. And if you're thinking about disc profiling, if you're naturally more of a conservative thinker, or you think of all the risks involved, if you've got to put on the pure optimism hat and then think of it from that way, and that person starts to go negative again, it's like, no, you're wearing the yellow hat right now. It's interesting when you've got six really different thinking people in the room wearing a hat that doesn't suit them, and then you've got someone that's a really good facilitator on the whiteboard, you have this cross-collaboration of ideas and thoughts, and then sometimes this magic happens, and it's like, ah, shit, awesome. Like, the answer was right there. And also, you know, I'm missing the trips on the plane, to be honest, visiting other agencies and conferences, because some of the best ideas that Nathan and I seem to come up with when we're 20,000 feet off the ground having a gin and tonic. And in many ways, it's like, oh, I hope they don't have Wi-Fi on the plane, because you actually do want it. But then when it's not there, it's like, I'm not being reactionary. I'm being like proactive with my thinking. And I think we all get caught up in that a little bit too much, where there's a great book by Daniel Kahneman called Thinking Fast and Thinking Slow, where it's really important to take in learnings from fast-paced learning, where it's like reading your emails, reading the news, like reading little snippets from a lead agent in the morning. But then it's like you're slow thinking. It's like reading a book, talking to someone in an environment where there's no distractions. You have good ideas that come from both. But the real strategic stuff seems to happen when you shut down, you're in a room. Like, I've got my OC advisory board meeting this afternoon, and we make sure that all the like kind of operational stuff has all been sent out to the board a week earlier. Have you got any questions about the financials? Have you got any questions about the management reports? Yes, no, yep, let's answer them. We need to delve a bit deeper in the board meeting, we will. But if we can get all that out of the way, so as soon as we get there and we're fresh, let's get into strategy. Let's talk about what we're working on with in our strat plan. What are the key three or four things that we're a bit stuck on? Are there any advisors that we can bring in to help to brainstorm this or workshop it? So, look, this is much about creating the environment as it is about having the smart people there. You know, often, like, the answers are there with your team that you've got, and you don't necessarily need to go and hire in, what are those consultants called that charge a fortune, McKinsey or one of those. Sure, they provide a lot of value, but there's often lots of answers there right in front of you.
Yeah, I agree with that. What's your favourite question to ask someone in a job interview, and what does their answer tell you about them?
Yeah, well, we just went through this process with hiring the COO, but I don't really do the job interviews much anymore. We've got a great people and culture manager who does all of that, but some interesting ones that I've heard over the years, the old, if you could have three people for dinner, who would they be? And that tells you a lot about the person and what they're into. They say, oh, you know, my great-great-great-grandfather, you know, that probably means they're a family person. They say, I'd like to have maybe Taylor Swift and Beyonce, and then they're into their music. And so I think that tells you a lot about someone, and it kind of maybe puts them off guard a little bit, and they just have to go, oh, I have to be really authentic here, not to skip the art. And you see some people thinking about, oh, what answer do I think they want to hear? Like, how do I look smart? Einstein, Da Vinci. So that's an interesting one. But, yeah, to be frank, not doing too many interviews anymore. Are there any great ones that you've heard, Sam?
I was just thinking, as you said that, I was thinking that's a great question, because then you could decide whether or not you wanted to be at that dinner party, and it might tell you whether you wanted to hire that person. Because I remember when I was doing this with Kate Strickland, who you mentioned earlier, she said, I wouldn't hire anyone I wouldn't want to go to dinner or drinks with.
I heard an analogy. Was it from, who said it, was it Chris Hanley? I think he might have said, if I could go to the cricket in the morning, a test match, and then the rain starts at the first ball, and then I've got to sit next to that person for the next 8 hours. If the answer is, yep, I can do that, then they're in the team. If it's like, nah, can't do that, they're not in the team. Well, that's a really good one.
Yeah. Well, he's got some great ones too, I think, from memory. In 6 months, what am I not going to like about you? And tell me something your mother taught you.
They're very good. Got me thinking that one of my best mates runs the Noosa Surf Lifesaving Club restaurant. When new waiting staff join the restaurant, he gets them to fill out a survey, and the score out of 10 on how good they self-assess them on certain things. And one of them, like, is, are you a gossiper? 10 out of 10 is like, you're full-blown gossiper. One is like, you don't gossip. And then he does all this survey with them, and then 2 weeks later, if they're doing that attribute and it's pissing him off, then he brings the survey out and says, well, something I'm not quite clear on here, John, because I thought that you said on the survey that, you know, you didn't slack off and that you weren't a gossiper, so something's not quite in alignment here.
Yeah, it's interesting. I sort of feel like, you know, job interviews these days, just CVs particularly, people could say anything on them, and your job interview questions have really got to cut through, like you said, the BS. What advice would you give someone going into leadership for the first time?
Yeah, good question, Sam. Going into leadership for the first time, I think really important to have some mentors around you and a bit of framework. So typically when you're moving into a leadership position, you're probably taking on a team, and that team may have some baggage with them. So I think the first thing that I would recommend to do is have some type of session where you're facilitating what's going well and what's not going well, and try to really create an environment where fostering honest, genuine conversations and being able to have feedback. So really trying to flush out what the key issues are in each person's mind. We do some of the sessions ourselves, but there's a bit of power in getting an independent person to do it. We use a company called Leading Teams. Daniel Healy here in South Australia does an awesome job of facilitating these sessions to create an environment where the team can get better again. It's like, even if you're good, how do we keep improving and getting better? Facilitating what we call genuine conversations, where you're empowering your team to be able to talk to each other and provide each other feedback. So probably really peeling the onion back on what the core issues are in your team, and then finding out what each person really wants to achieve with their time at that organisation. So having a plan in place that you can help them to achieve their goals and aspirations in the company. Probably flushing the issues out, having a genuine conversation about what they're looking to achieve, any of their struggles, anything that's going well. And there's templates all over the internet, whether you use, the keep, improve, stop, start, the KISS or what, or probably really just from a leadership perspective, it's setting some frameworks early on and getting to know your people and understanding what their challenges are.
What does leadership look like at home?
At home. My wife is the leader of our house. looking in the background of home office at the moment, it's a combination home office and Pilates sort of studio.
Oh, yeah. Actually, I see the reformer in the back.
Yeah. I still haven't had a go at it yet. I'm looking forward to it at some point. I keep promising Paula that I will. Leadership at home. Well, I mentioned that we've got three young children. So really, it's about just trying to remain sane at the moment. And again, it's like, you know, without sounding like it's too structured, like it's how do we all have like kind of agreed behaviours as a family, and what are our values as a family? And on my whiteboard right here, it's our family values are health, education, experiences, and our spaces. So, and then we've got a whiteboard in our kitchen where, you know, most days we get the kids to write up one thing they're thankful for. So like gratitude wall. But look, it's not always perfect. And we're like any other family. We have fights. And like the three-year-old, we woke up literally to the three-year-old taking a wee on our bedroom floor this morning on the carpet. So we're all human as well. But yeah, you need to have some frameworks when you've got the chaos going on. Without the frameworks, it's like really chaos can just take over and get angry and all that sort of stuff. We've got a 24-minute rule where if we do have an argument with each other, like we have to make up within 24 minutes. So not personal and that we can just move on. So, yeah, there's lots of little hints and tips that I've taken from other great mums and dads that we're trying to implement to remain sane. Any tips from you?
No, I was going to say I'm going to go and write that down. Actually, I like the 24 minutes. And this is something COVID's taught us all, isn't it? That life's too short.
Exactly. It used to be wife's 24 minutes. It used to be the 24-hour rule. And it's like, nah, life's too short. Yeah. Waste a whole day being pissed off with each other.
Yeah, it's not a bad rule to take into the office, actually. You don't let anything fester for longer than 24 minutes.
Yeah, and that's, you know, if you lose a listing, it's like don't make one lost listing a whole bad week. It's how do you not make a bad moment into a bad day and a bad day into a bad week and a bad week into a bad month and so on. It's like, you know, some mechanisms in place to just stop it, pull the momentum back and move on.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, look, Alex, it's been wonderful to catch up with you again today and also talk the Leadership Diaries with you. I am going to get that book done one day soon. But is there one piece of advice that you'd like to leave everyone with, or one thing that you'd like them to remember from this podcast?
Look, and I'm stealing probably the same thought from Joel from Remax, who spoke the other day. It's like, you know, have a red hot crack at real estate. Be productive in the time that you've got. Make sure you've got some structure around it. But also just be kind to yourself and be kind to people. Visualize the big OC board going up before I go into the listing. But I think, how can I help these people? And if I walk out of this door and they're in a better place because of my visit for real estate, then I've done my job. And the energy around that typically translates to people wanting to use your services anyway. So be kind to yourself and be kind to people, but be competitive and have a red hot go.
That's great advice, Alex Owens. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Sam. Good to chat.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Elevate with thanks to connectnow.com.au. Don't forget to download your written action guide from this podcast containing extra tips, links and shortcuts. Visit eliteagentelevate.com.